Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. And with Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose. And he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Hello and welcome to the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former WWE executive for about 15 years, long time there. He was with Retrosoft Media. He was with Acclaim. He is Mr. Michael Archer. Mike, welcome to the Two Man Power Trip. How you doing?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
What's going on in your world? What have you been up to lately?
Currently working with a new studio on a new unannounced wrestling game. You know, working on some licenses, some federations, things like that. But I don't have enough. It's not far enough down the line that I could. So we'll have to make another date for me to come back when it's announced.
That's nice. Yeah, that cool? Sounds awesome. Yeah, okay, definitely. Yeah.
It's with a group called Hyper Focus Games.
Nice. So back into the wrestling games again. You're like the master of the wrestling games.
Well, It kind of fits, you know. I was doing WWE games at Acclaim since 93 to 2015. So, you know, it's kind of in my wheelhouse.
Big time, yeah. When you go back that far, can you believe how popular wrestling games are? Like, people are nuts for wrestling games.
John, you know what? It was always a great seller for Acclaim because, you know, they said it was an evergreen title. And, you know, and if you think about it, it's one of the games that really lends itself well because kids can't really, and I know there's backyard wrestling and things they shouldn't be doing, but for them to play or live out their wrestling dreams, games really help them. Baseball, they play baseball. Football, for football, this was a little different, especially at the time, and especially in the 8-bit, 16-bit days, you know, the technology wasn't the greatest. You know, everything was hand-drawn and bitmap, but it was so much fun. And look, the thing about WWE is it's always heavy nuance. You know, their characters, their music, their presentation. So, you know, Acclaim was really great at being organic with that, making sure that came forward.
When you look at it, too, it's like, man, these guys are so popular. They are like video game character or like cartoon characters, but they're real life. So there's something of a great element of everything mixed in for wrestling and video games.
Absolutely. They are walking, talking superheroes.
It's amazing just to look at now the landscape of just how many video wrestling games have there been since 93, too, right? Crazy.
A lot, and a lot of good ones. You know, you had the years of the Aki games, No Mercy. You know, everybody holds that up as the standard bearer. But you know, the Yuke's team out of Japan did a wonderful job all those years holding up, you know, the SmackDown franchise. And look, what people don't realize is how tough a wrestling game actually is to create. You know, there's not a lot of striking. Right. There's a lot of holds. So there's always some clipping issues. There's always, you know, some priority issues. Things can get, you know, when the game goes out, it can be buggy at first. But, you know, you clean it up as you go along.
So how did you actually get into like the wrestling landscape just as far as you're doing video games? When does wrestling kind of pop in there and say, hey, why don't we start doing wrestling titles?
So, you know, you're always kind of drawn to stuff. So I don't say this to brag because I washed out. I went to Johnny Rod's wrestling school. And I washed out after about 6 months to a year. I wasn't good. It was a lot, you know, taking bumps is not what people, you know, when they see it on TV, it looks like second nature. You know, you take a bump the first time, you knock the wind out of yourself, you know, your bell is ringing, you know, and then you fall into something called getting blown up. And I've never had that happen. And, you know, you can barely feel your legs. So if you're trying to run, your legs aren't underneath you. And I played college baseball. So I thought, like, this is going to be a breeze. You know, I did Penn State's where you had to carry the other guy and everything. John, after like 2 or 3 minutes, I couldn't breathe. And on top of that, you have to be thinking, right? Quickly, because they're calling it on the fly. However, I made a good friend in Tommy Dreamer, and we stayed close throughout the years. He went on to do great things in the ring, and I went on to make games.
Man, you're so right. I've taken a bunch of bumps. Did some wrestling training. Man, the first time you do it, you know you do backyard stuff forever. You don't really know how to do it, but you actually take a real bump. You're right. The wind gets taken out of you. It's almost like somebody attacked your lungs. It's like, whoa. It's like a little shock to the system.
Well, and you know, you try to learn that over and over. You know, you get up, get down, get up, get down, and then you just, you know, you gas out. And it's kind of funny because the first time they told us to get in the ring, they were like, "Yeah, 2-3 minutes," and I was like, 2-3 minutes, this I could do like a half hour. You know, I could jog on a treadmill for a half hour. John, I'm telling you, 2 minutes in, I was like, ring the bell for the love of God.
It is crazy to think like what they do. Plus, you have to sell too. When you're at, you know, obviously at a certain level, you got to be selling. That actually can exhaust you too, take energy, because you got to pull stuff and got to, you know, register and then sell it. It's tough.
It is. Listen, it would be a tough job if it was 20 minutes from their house, you know, factor in all the other stuff that they have to go through to, you know, through travel, the workout, hotels, flight. You know, I don't know if you've been to the airports lately. It hasn't been a lot of fun traveling, you know, and these people do it for a living and they make it look easy, kind of like what they do in the ring. They make it look easy. So a guy like myself thinks I could be Hulk Hogan, and then I take my first bump, and I want to leave, you know?
Yep. Who was in your training class with Johnny Rods?
So Dreamer was one of our teachers. I don't really know the guys in my class. I'll tell you the guys that were attending at that time. Dreamer, Big Sal, Graziano. He was the monster Matt Man. He had a big mask. He just had his first Big Vito trained us a little bit here and there. And do you remember Dances with Dudley?
Yeah.
He was great. Like he would talk you through stuff. He'd walk you through stuff. And, you know, he was just such a natural at it. Like when you got there and you were really green and you saw these guys when you first showed up, you couldn't believe how fast they were moving, how big they were, you know, and everything was so crisp. And you were like, wait a minute, I'm supposed to do that? Like, either I'm going to fall on that guy or he's going to crush me, you know? But, you know, Johnny Rods takes it slow. You start learning, you know, by the numbers. Dreamer and Indio, or DW, and, you know, Vito took us along slow and made sure we did things properly. Like I said, John, I just struggled to, like, the joke was, how many clotheslines can I throw a match, you know? You're pushing. After a while, guys were like, you got to come up with something right, a little bit better than a clothesline. You can't keep going to that one.
Did you like those guys? Like, Dance with Dudley, Vito, did you get along with them? Did you like them?
Yes, a lot. I'm still in contact with Vito. I've lost contact with Dances with Dudley, but Dreamer, you know, we always check in. Always. You know, I say this in every meeting I'm in or every podcast I'm on. Find me somebody who has a bad thing to say about Tommy Dreamer, you know?
Hey, he's a great guy.
Isn't he?
He is. It's funny when you go back and you look at it, it's like, man, he's such a babyface. But he kind of really is in real life. You know what I mean? As far as his character, he was like the pure babyface. He kind of is in real life, too.
No, and like, you're right, a sweet guy. I know he'd be mad at me saying that, but he really is.
He's got a very dry sense of humor, too. If you talk to him one-on-one, very dry, but it's very, very almost a little Seinfeld-esque, a little Larry David-esque.
Yeah, you're not sure he's joking or not, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. Like, I had him this a couple years ago. I had him for a signing somewhere. And he's like, thank you for doing this. My daughters think I'm famous now. Like, you know, you're like, wait, is he kidding? Is he serious? Is he being sarcastic? What's going on?
You know, his daughters, his babies, were in The Sopranos. They were Bobby and Janice's twins.
Oh, oh my God. I somehow didn't know that. Wow, amazing.
Yeah, a little piece of trivia.
Wow, damn, that's crazy. And I literally just rewatched the Sopranos that long ago. Now
it feels like everybody's rewatching it now.
Yeah. I guess it's 25 years, technically.
Yeah, yeah.
Good show. Good show.
Great show.
I'm sure everyone would agree. I've really never heard, you know, we're talking about Dreamer not hearing bad things. You never really hear anything bad about The Sopranos either, as far as being a great show.
Well, the toughest part about The Sopranos was finishing up and bodies started to drop, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I love Bacala.
Yeah.
You know, and the trains, you know, at the train store and everything.
Yep. Damn Phil Leotardo and those guys. Damn them. And the only, well, actually, maybe the only bad thing, some people didn't like, probably about half the audience didn't like the ending, the finish. It was too up in the air.
Yeah. But look, you know what? Through the years, you kind of come to grips with what they were trying to say, you know? And if you think about it, it is what we wanted, what each person wants it to be. So I'm okay with it. You know, we do like to have things, you know, spelled out. At the time, yeah, I was a little frustrated, but, you know, you mellow with age.
Man, on the rewatch, they got me. You know when it goes black?
Yeah.
I remember when I originally watched it, I thought somebody did something to the cable. They got me again the second time. I thought my son did something to the TV. I go, what did you do? What did you press? He goes, I didn't touch anything. That's like, damn it, they got me twice.
My poor father called me, same thing. I think my cable went out. How did it end? And I was like, no, Dad, that was the ending.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They tricked me twice. I was like, wait a second, damn it, they got me again.
But great storytelling, right?
Yep. That's what it's all about. Hey, just like wrestling, great storytelling.
Absolutely. We're in a great time right now, you know, and it seems like all groups and companies are firing on all cylinders.
You still watch like religiously or kind of casually?
I try, John. It's always been a constant in my life since I was little, you know, wrestling and baseball. So, if I can't watch it live, I'll always have it, you know, DVR'd, and I'll always make sure I'll get it on the treadmill or something, you know. But, you know, I'm pulling for the AEW crew. I think WWE does their best work when they're being pushed, you know. So I'm really hoping that the Mercedes Moné thing really gives them the shot in the arm they're looking for. You know, the Will Ospreay match in the last pay-per-view was out of sight. You know, they do seem to be missing one ingredient. I don't know what it is, but, you know, it ain't for lack of trying. They're out there scuffling and pushing, and they're doing a great job, and I'm sure they're going to find the right mix.
That is true. They need the competition. I always feel like they're at their best because those 20 years or so, you know, 19 years, whatever, WWE's gone and AEW shows up. In between, there was a lot of fluff, a lot of laziness. A lot, you know, as soon as AEW, I noticed they picked it right back up and they really started to put it in gear.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought, you know, this whole thing with The Rock, you know, taking the match at Mania was a mistake. And then all of a sudden, the way they kind of spun it around, you know, you can't get enough of it, you know, and now it's on everything. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, it's crazy. At first, I was like, okay, Cody can finish the story. But now after The Rock, there's that concert. He has all these awesome promos. Like, damn it, I wish it was Rock Roman now. Yeah. Damn.
Well, that's the thing. He's so good. You know, let's hope, or we kind of understand he'll probably be, after Mania, he'll be in and out, but hopefully he'll be back to being cheered because fans want to cheer him. You know, he's an easy guy to like.
Even when he's being a heel and you know, making fun of the crowd, they're still laughing. Like Memphis, he was over as a babyface in
there. Yes, yes. But that's his personality, you know. The first game I ever did, the first 3D game I ever did was when he had just started, so he was a kid, you know, and he was just so happy to be in the video game. You know, like he'd call every day and ask about his model, and then who'd have thunk he'd grow up and to be the, you know, the biggest action star ever, you know?
Pretty crazy. What was the first game he was in? Do you remember?
I believe it was Warzone. We had like a 12-man roster. And it was, we had to keep it. We were just starting out. We just transitioned over from, you know, Ultimate and Bitmap to 3D. So we didn't want to go, we didn't want to bite off more than we could chew. We went with about 12 models. And Rock was something that they really were pushing. Rocky Maivia, they wanted him, you know, to really break out. So the issue was when we got him, he was injured. So he did come in for some voiceovers and he did, you know, some modeling, but he wasn't on the road at the time. But super kid, super polite, you know, you could tell then he had the charisma, you know, built like a Greek god, you know.
Oh, my God. I was at the Survivor Series 96 when he makes his debut. I was like, man, this guy, he's got something. I don't know if I like this character. A little cheesy, a little corny, but this guy's got something. He's 6'5", 6'6", 275. He's athletic as hell. He used to play football. I mean, and obviously who his dad and his grandfather are and his whole family is, he's just made for the business. But you could tell there was something about him that was going to be great.
Absolutely. And look, you know what, to carry that gimmick around for a while and then bounce back and do what he did. Cause look, I wasn't sure he was coming back. And I said it to him, you know, I don't want to say it was a podcast or something like this. I said, you know, you could have easily just turned tail and, you know, and he said, it never entered my mind. You know, I knew I was going to do this and I knew I was going to see it through.
When you're watching current wrestling today, and you're looking at it, do you pay attention more so to like the WWE games, or are you kind of focusing on what your project is in your games? Like, are you really analyzing everything a part of their business, including the video games?
Yeah, I do. I do keep an eye on, you know, the WWE game up until 2015. Like I said, I've been doing it since 93. It was a part of everything, you know, and it it changed through the years in different machinations and different, hardware systems, different technology. It kind of grew along with it. Sometimes, Tony Hawk was great, but as the technology changed, it kind of changed. Sometimes you outgrow it. WWE always seemed boosted by the next level, and that's kind of what their show is. They're always one up on the next level. They get better with each one. That's kind of like what was happening with gaming. Did we scuffle a little bit, with the GameCube and Microsoft? Yeah. If you recall, Xbox and GameCube, they were tough to program for, So we really doubled down and worked really hard on the SmackDown games, make sure it was clean and fast and pretty, And that's why we kind of changed over to a porting strategy midway through my time there.
When you look at the current games, have you noticed a lot of nostalgia, like the nostalgia sells? It seems like that is the key market to me in a lot of the games, is making sure you have some sort of nostalgic event or nostalgic person or some sort of nostalgia in the games.
Well, it's interesting, John, because at WWE, I also helped put together the Legends program with Jim Ross and Brian Shields. I know you're friendly with him.
Yes.
But we put together the list of names of talent that we thought could help sell and move merchandise. And it was a nice way for WWE to kind of give back. To your question, yes, it's important to have that nostalgia aspect just so the father and son can kind of connect. But one time at WWE, I made a Legends product and I went all in on Legends. And, sometimes, without reading my KPIs or my data, so you'd have people going, well, who's Hulk Hogan? We love that this guy Rock is in it. We saw him in the latest movie, but we don't know what he has to do with. So in the next round of gaming, because it didn't sell great, sold half of what the bigger game did. But once we got all the intel back, they wanted those legends, but they wanted them almost in the counterpart or, like Andre and Sho. So you get a little of both, sometimes people go, oh no, I remember Hulk Hogan, it's the age demo of kids that play the game versus, the adults that just love to say, hey, whatever happened to Junkyard Dog and Cheap J Strongbow, and that's how we came up with the Legends program. Jim Ross kind of sat down and kind of mapped it out. And me and Brian went out and started calling people.
People do love the nostalgia. They love to relive those glory days.
Still. If you go on if you check your own social media, I'm sure it's vintage wrestling, San Francisco wrestling, the Cow Palace, things like the Detroit Cabo, that type of thing.
It's funny when you said about like old school, new school a little bit. Kind of reminds me of like WCW NWO, and they had the NWO. When they put the NWO by itself, it oddly wasn't as successful. But as soon as it was with on WCW TV, it was the biggest thing. So it's like you have to mix the both worlds.
You got to get a little bit of both. And look, I was, like I said, Hulk Hogan is the
biggest ever. By far,
It's just a matter of knowing your audience and knowing what they're looking for, and I was glad I got to write that wrong, because I was so ecstatic to be doing a Legends game. Like, we're going to get back to these guys and their families and their legacies. And then it really didn't come off as the way we liked it. Now, it was good for the talent that were in it. They, they loved the representation. They loved being in it. It's just, I think I was a little disappointed in the sales, and maybe because I was such a geek fan, I kind of oversold it to myself, you know.
What else was in the Legends program that you guys did? Was it like t-shirts and all that other stuff?
So the main crux of it was games, action figures. Do you remember when home entertainment or DVDs used to be really big?
Oh, yeah. I have a ton of them. Yeah, still.
And books. So talents. So guys like Jake Roberts, Ted DiBiase, Dusty Rhodes, they could make a ton of money just by signing their name, because you start throwing them into things like that, that kind of adds up, you know? Yep. And the thing about Dusty and Ted and those guys, they still made a wonderful presentation. So we'd bring them to Mattel, or we'd bring them to THQ or Take Two, let them meet the people. You know, those guys were, it's kind of funny, you know, when we took them to Mattel, it was Ted and Dusty. They were like, well, should we tell them what to say? No. What should we do? Tell them what you want and then point at them. Like, really? Yeah. Yeah. Especially Dusty. You know what I mean? Just tell them these three things and then move away from them. You know, he's not being rude, but he's going to start to formulate it in his head. And it was wonderful. I mean, then before you know it, he was yelling at the sales reps in the audience. You know, he kind of got involved, you know, and then Ted came up and did the $1 Million Man thing. It was a good time.
And the action figures and stuff, I mean, they still sell like crazy. I just saw this past year they were going to release 14 more Hulk Hogan figures, like 14 different styles. So obviously old school guys do sell.
They do. And look, everybody has that, you know, the nostalgia. You know, I always say that the Legends program started because anytime I'd go out somewhere and they'd say, where do you work? I'd say WWE, and they go, oh, that wrestling stuff. I go, yeah, that wrestling stuff. And then like 2 minutes later, they come over and go, whatever happened to Afa the Wild Samoan, you know,
or
Junkyard Dog? And you go, oh, so you do know it. Okay. Yeah. And after a while, you start to say to yourself, you know, that's about the 15th different talent that they mentioned to me. You know, they're still looking for something. Maybe they'll consume, you know. So the whole idea of the Legends program was to kind of reconnect with lapsed fans. You know, we were trying to bring them back into, you know, the fray. I don't recall which Royal Rumble it was, but it was a Royal Rumble later on in years, and Snuka and Piper hooked it up. And there was like a handful of people that got it. You know what I mean? Now, yep. the fans in the building got it. You know, we got it, but like my kids were like, I don't understand. Like everybody cleared out and let them.
Yeah.
And you go, yeah, when this thing was starting to change, they did an angle that was, you know, not seen before, done before. Or maybe it was like, you know, in Memphis, or not seen up here, you know?
Yep. Yeah, the old coconut to the head of Snuka. Yeah, yep. I think it was 2008. I think it was that Rumble.
Okay. Yeah. Forgive me. I don't.
MSG. I know it was the Madison Square Garden.
But I remember, like, once they started to hook up, the fans started to get it. You know, and you're like, yeah, that's what we want from the Legends program. Like those people talking. So there I am explaining to my kids, you know, like this is what happened, and this is why people are reacting like this.
Man. The Legends, like, well, I guess it's contract, whatever you want to call it, still going on today. Is that basically kind of the afterthought, or what came after that as far as those Legends deals that the guys have today?
The Legends deals, I don't know if it was an afterthought. That was the whole idea Jim Ross kind of had. And Jim, the whole idea was not to prohibit you from making a living, right? So there were a few times where we would have somebody under contract, like Rob Van Dam or Sabu, and they'd be wrestling on TNA. That's fine. You know what I mean? Like, we were looking for something different. We were looking to maximize and monetize their merch rights. They didn't. Now, you know, would we like them to have jumped ship? That wasn't my call. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I ran the play that Jim Ross called. We would, you know, make lists. We would do some hard target, you know, research. Because look, we did one with Bruiser Brody, and I thought, like, man, this is going to be awesome. And it didn't. What resonated were like the 80s guys, you know, the Akeem and Boss Man. Those were the ones that were really big, you know. And to me, the you know, you get to see Brody, like, wow. You know, I hardly got to see him growing up. And then you see him in an action figure, like, I got to have him, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, that's why we learn our lessons. And that's why you know, you kind of go through your research.
It's like those Hogan era WWF guys, 84 to 93 WWF guys. Those are the guys that everybody remembers.
Yes. And look, the more theatrical, too, always works, you know. And I'm not saying there's, you know, every once in a while you get that, like, the hardcore collector one. I mean, I think there was one when we found Hogan in, like a white singlet, and people were going crazy over it, you know? That's the fun part of it, because you go, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
My father-in-law knows, like, nothing about wrestling, but it was weird. Like, he was like, Hulk Hogan, of course, everybody knows Hogan.
Right.
He's like, and then Andre the Giant. Then he's like thinking of guys, and he randomly goes, JYD, Junkyard Dog. I was like, wow, you remembered him? He goes, what about the Iron Sheik? You know, like, and I was like, how the hell? Like, it's weird. Certain guys, I guess because they were part of mainstream, they were part of the culture, you can't forget them.
You can't forget them. It resonates, and, you know, their legend still lives on today. You know, there's going to, especially in our demo right now, John, if you reached out to someone, they'd have a good Sheik story. You know what I mean? It's just the way it goes.
When you go back, right, your first time, how did you start working for WWF, like, to begin with? Was that 93-ish, or was it even before that?
No, I started working at WWE in 2000.
Okay. So Acclaim first, then WWE.
Yeah,
okay.
I worked at a gaming company. And it was working on WWE games. Royal Rumble was the first game I worked on with the Super Nintendo. You know, I just remember nights upon nights testing, hearing the Mr. Perfect, you know, theme song, and no complaints. You know what I mean? I was fortunate to do so. Okay. And Acclaim was this great place, young talent, great minds, great people. You know, I'm still in contact with a lot of good wrestling guys. James Daly and Peter Wanick, they all helped out build that wrestling franchise. It was just the right time, the right place. Everything kind of, you know, fell into place. And I kind of grew as the WWE license grew, I kind of grew with it. So I came in as an analyst, and that's basically testing games. And then associate producer, producer, senior producer, executive, all the way up till the time I started working as a brand director, which brand director meant you were doing a little more business development and licensing. And right around 2000, the beginning of 2000, WWE left Acclaim to go to THQ. And that's when, so, and I don't know if this is the story you were looking for. I do have that. Before I left Acclaim, I did set up meetings with ECW, you know, through Dreamer, the Freeport Rec Center. I believe this one was at the Freeport Grammar School. We met with Tommy and Paul Heyman and one of their guys. And we hashed out a video game deal between Acclaim and ECW. And Acclaim became their publishing partner, and they took a stake in the company. So there was an influx of cash. And it worked really well for a little while, you know. At that time, you know, I was looking forward to something different. I'd been there a long time. WWE came calling, you know, it was the right time. And it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because, you know, ECW began to scuffle, you know. But so it was an interesting time. So in 2000, they brought me up, and basically slid me into consumer product. There was no real video game department like they have now. So I just worked on, you know, consumer products, product development, licensing, which it's a lot of stuff that I like to do now. You know what I mean? And for WWE, it was kind of, you know, when you say you have a lot of useless knowledge, you know, people would come to you and go, oh, yeah, you're like, you know how you just hit me with the Royal Rumble thing? I don't have it anymore. You know what I mean? I used to be able to go, oh, yeah, that's Devon Dudley, you know. After a while, you kind of let it slide, you know.
You lose it, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that ECW, the Acclaim deal, do you think that kind of led to them scuffling or no?
No. They were losing talent. We were trying to help them retain their talent, you know. Like in the first round of they'd lost the Dudley Boys, which was big. Then they lost Taz. The tough one, the biggest one was Mike Awesome. I remember, I think Mike Awesome either showed up on a pay-per-view or a Monday Night Nitro. Yeah. And I remember getting a call from the head guy to claim, like, isn't this the guy you said they're building? At that time, they were kind of building Rob versus Awesome, you know, and they were doing a lot of things where they were making sure those guys weren't touching, but there was some tension, you know, and they were doing this like slow burn. And then once Awesome left, you were like, I can't even measure that in dollars, how much, you know, we just lost on that. But, you know, had realities and he had to go do what he needed to do.
So you go for WWF. They technically don't have the division per se, but are you doing just video games or are you doing other stuff too, as you're moving on?
I was doing a lot of product development because I had a background in WWE or knowledge of WWE. I was able to help the brand assurance team a lot. You know, it's not, WWE is not what a lot of people, you know, when you bring in a licensee from the outside, they think it's very smash and burn and crash and thunder and mayhem and all. WWE never marketed itself that way. They wanted it to kind of be Gatorade and Nike and, you know, all about precision, athleticism. But there were people out there who only read like half the book where it was like, okay, we're going to go out there and we're going to just, you know, create mayhem. And why is everything on fire? Why, like, just relax, you know, tell a story, you know, use the talent, you know, properly. There was a lot of misnomers when it came to it. You know what I mean? The way the product was portrayed. And I get it because sometimes on TV it could look one way. But, you know, when we were dealing with talent and dealing with, you know, retail and online media and stuff like that, you wanted to be sure it was held to the highest standard. So, you know, we did a lot of art banks and procedures. We wanted to be sure that everybody was immersed in WWE culture, make sure they knew the do's and don'ts, even if it's an unwritten rule, like the belt conversation, you know, that type of thing.
Can't say belt, it's a title or what, you know.
Yeah, belt holds up your pants, John.
That's like
every rule, right, that we had in our do's and don'ts was the result of an ass kicking somebody got. You know what I mean? You're like, all right, write that down. We'll never do that again.
Like basically Vince McMahon saying, hey, these are the do's and don'ts. And then he's like sarcastic, belt holds up your pants. You don't win a belt.
But he would never give you the do's and don'ts. That would just come down like, okay, don't use belt or, you know, don't say wrestler, things like that. So you'd have to jot those down and make sure everybody. And at the time, you know, WWE was worldwide, is worldwide, and they had close to 250 licensees, and our department was probably like 5 to 10 people on the licensing and merch side. So it was a lot to cover, you know, and make sure everybody was blanketed and properly understood. But what I could tell you is when we were out, like on the business development portion, when you were trying to sign licensees or solicit and bring them in, the only thing you really had to do to close a deal was take them to a show. If you took them to a show and they looked around and you saw the families and you saw the merch stands, you know, and, you know, let's say I would speak to talent relations and say, you know, I got a big licensee coming in. I'd really, if possible, can you send me a guy or I'm sorry, can you send me a talent? I guess I'm so used to saying diva, but female superstar, male superstar, anybody that, you know, can engage with some business people, talk us up, make sure they know. And that when you come with us, you come with first, you know, it's first class all the way.
I love that. And the wrestler will, or the superstar will sell for you guys.
The superstar was always, I can't tell you how many times you were just shocked at how good they were. You were like, I remember one time at a licensing summit at one of the Mania shows, and we had John Cena he came in as a special guest, and somebody asked him a question about piracy of products, about, you know, his move set or his workout or who he's beating up tonight. And John gave an answer, and I remember going, really? Is that right? Like, and they were like, yeah. I was like, holy, like the champion knows, but I don't know how piracy works on my end. He was like, yeah, no, he hit it nail on the head.
Smart guy. Yeah. He knows.
Very, very smart guy.
Now is like the edict. Does that come down from like Jim Ross, who is taking it from Vince, or like, hey, it's gotta be superstar pal. And you know, all that other stuff.
No, it was never like told like it. It was just, it would kind of come down through, you know, your senior staff. So if you were working with somebody and you said, oh yeah, you know, that wrestler the other night, like try to stick to superstar, you know, there wasn't. And again, if it happened, there was no big issue. They would just say, look, going forward, this is going to be our vernacular. You know, this is what's going to differentiate us from everybody else. And yeah, it became, after a while, it became second nature, you know, it is kind of funny not to say wrestler, and wrestling's right there in our title, you know?
Yeah. Weird. That was always a weird thing. It had to be superstar. Like they were branding themselves above wrestling. Like they were WWE superstars, or not just WWE wrestlers, or wrestlers in general.
Yeah.
Any sort of relationship with Vince McMahon or no?
No, not really. A few meetings here and there. Mainly, you know, like I said, senior staff.
When you're there, when do you start seeing like a climb up the corporate ladder, if you will, or like what's the climb up the corporate ladder like?
Well, let's see. I think I went there as a manager. So manager, senior manager, director, senior director, vice president. So I guess like five steps, but you know, I was lucky enough to work with some really wonderful people. You know, I didn't have a lot of licensing background. And my boss, Donna Goldsmith, and my other boss, Florence DiGiorgio, kind of took me in, kind of made sure that they played to my strengths, which was the product development, brand assurance. And then they would, you know, kind of coach me up on the licensing portion of things and on the finance portion of things, you know, the best thing I could tell you is I made some lifelong friends and worked for some of the best people, smartest people. Like seeing what Donna and Florence did really influenced me the way I manage people now, you know. Yeah, you're not getting this right now, but you're really good at this. Let's focus on this. And then after you get your footing, we're going to try to branch you out a little bit more and more and more. And the other thing was they knew who I was. So they knew every time they wanted to give me a little bit more, I would get a little apprehensive, and they were very patient and they walked me through it. And I'm not sure that's how it was in every department and every group. I just know that they made sure I was kind of buttoned up, you know. And then once Donna and Florence were comfortable with you, that was it. You were good.
When you look at like that and like the corporate structure, WWE, it sounds very professional, but also sounds almost like a good baseball manager when they're not going to put up this, you know, guy, this lefty against a lefty. You know what I mean? Like they're setting you up for success.
I always said that about Donna and Florence. I always said they were like a really good head coach. Like they knew the matchup. They knew, you know, and in a, they could have been cutthroat or non-caring, but hey, listen, we're going to go with this one for this. You know, you're doing good, but you're not like where Florence is right now, or you're not where this other guy is. So, you know, drop back, keep doing what you're doing, and you'll be there soon enough. And every time they made a promise, they came through, you know. Donna and Florence every year gave me a work plan, and I worked through it, and that's how I was able to get promoted.
What's your favorite games like while you were there? Like just a bunch of when you look at it as you're kind of climbing the corporate ladder. Obviously, you're a big part of the gaming and the licensing. What's some of your favorites?
So, I'm going to get killed on this one, but I liked when I first came in, they were working on a Twisted Metal WWE game.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was called Crush Hour. And the whole idea was to take WWE out of the arena, you know. And I'll tell you why I liked extending the brand, you know. One of the last things I did at WWE was the Immortals game, you know. I loved Injustice. I loved Warner Brothers and their team at NetherRealm. We got together and... you know, those guys were able, they made magic happen with their art. You know, it was one of the easiest processes because they were, you know, if there was any kind of feedback, it was always minuscule. You know, sometimes, you know, you'd get models from other teams and you go, all right, well, you might want to throw this out and start all over again, you know?
Yep.
With this group, they were just so on it. And again, it was probably easier because it was an extension of, you know, they were outside the ring. And one of the rules that WWE always had was, if you're going to go outside the ring, go outside the ring. Don't do like WWE Fight Club, you know, go outside the ring, go whimsical. And, you know, and we were still sure to stay within the PG guidelines, but, you know, in a more, in your face, you know, and the models were so good, you know, the gameplay was fun. One of the things I was pushing hard for was an Immortals console game. I thought that would have been a winner.
Did you love like that Royal Rumble, the original one you were saying, or do you like just for nostalgia reasons, but also when you're making, I mean, it's pretty damn cool. Like kind of come be like, wow, this is you know, somewhat historic. We're making these cool new video games and these new systems.
It was awesome. You know, and look, everything kind of, like I said, everything hit at the right time. Like WWE started to get hot. Gaming started to get hot and we kind of climbed together. I just remember those early days, you know, meeting with some of the talent and doing voiceovers and things like that. And like, everybody was so good because everybody wanted to be in it, you know, or on it. It was, you know, Royal Rumble was the first one that kind of really pulled me in. You know, I always liked wrestling games. I'd never found one that I liked, you know, technically where you're playing with it. And like, that kind of felt good. You know, the combos were easy enough to do. And we added in a little more whimsical stuff that we kind of took out as we went on, because we wanted to really make it a sim game. But then I got to work on WrestleMania, the arcade game, and that was just So much fun, you know, very arcadey.
Very cool. Any ones that you didn't like or didn't succeed, or ones you look back like, maybe a regret, or you wish you had that one back?
In your house. In your house. We were kind of hamstrung from the jump, right? We were using a tech engine that we'd already used, you know, the years prior. The Ultimat Studio was kind of a year. It was kind of a year removed. It was the blue screen.
Yep.
It was probably well past its shelf life. But we were bullish because WWE had done so well the year prior with WrestleMania. And, you know, we had a slew of like brand new talent. Like Vader and Warrior and Ahmed and Jeff Jarrett and Taker, and these guys came in, you know, they did all those moves, you know, in front of the blue screen. So when it was time to suplex somebody, they'd have to get in a body harness and kind of go up, and you know, somebody in a green costume would pick them up and kind of I think it was more ambitious than it needed to be. So technically, you know, it didn't really live up to it. You know, it was colorful. That was one I really wish I got back. But I remember when that was over, that's when I started saying, we can't do this anymore. We have to do 3D. We have to. And everybody was on board. You know, the only thing about making a 3D video game is, you know, it's not an annual thing. You know, they do it annually, but it's not, you know, it's very difficult, and it probably took us like a year and a half, 2 years to get Warzone out.
Which, like you say, like sometimes characters are in and out, or, you know, whatever. Yeah, it could be one of those things where you want it annually, but it can't be.
Right. And yeah, we've definitely had times where, you know, talent would leave or, you know, get released, even when I was at WWE. But WWE was very good with it on both sides, when I was at Acclaim and when I was at WWE. You know, when I was at Acclaim, that's when the Montreal screw job happened, and we told them, you know, like, you know, it's not as simple as just lifting the guy out. You know what I mean? There's stories and lines and cut scenes. You know, it's a lot of work, you know? WWE was very understanding. They understood, you know, and Brett was allowed to, you know, stay in attitude.
Stay in the game. You're right.
Yeah. So the sequel to Warzone was WWE Attitude.
When you look at those games, the quality, or I guess you could say, you know, the video, how it is then versus how it is now, do you think people like that? Because sometimes to me, maybe it's just me, but I feel like sometimes it can be too realistic now, and it doesn't feel like a video game. It's almost like too realistic.
John, you know what's so funny is I remember at that time looking at like Warzone and Attitude going, this is incredible. It's so lifelike.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then if you see it now, you're like, what the heck? Like everybody's fuzzy and blocky, and you're like, that doesn't look like Stone Cold. Like, what am I? And you see where, you know, the business is now, you're like, oh my God. Like, but that just lets you know how far it's come. You know, we always used to be really excited when the new hardware would come out, because you'd be like, think about how awesome, you know, the PlayStation 5 is. What's the upgrade on the next one going to be? You know what I mean? What's PlayStation 10 going to have? What's, you know, Xbox 15? How are you going to, at some point, you're going to have the guys show up in your house, you know, and you're going to have to press a button, and they're going to have to do what you say. I don't know how you upgrade it from there.
So true. It's like, it looks so realistic now. I can't imagine it looking even more realistic, some of the stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think video gamers like the realism, though, or do you think they like a little bit of cartooniness to it?
I think there's a market for both, you know. And look, seeing what's going on with Retro Mania, you could see that some people like the 2D, nice and easy, because they feel like, you know, I can't do the combos or I can't do the button mashing or the other thing, John, is as we get older, you know, you want to get in and get out. You know what I mean? Like, if I just want to have a match, I want to get in and get out. I don't want to be, you know, sitting through screens and videos and music and all that's nice. It's really great. It makes the presentation so much better. Sometimes you just kind of want to plug and play. True. It really depends on the individual. You know what I mean?
My son has, I don't know which Mario Brothers it is, but it's on the Nintendo Switch. You can go from the 3D to the 2D. Like, there's some parts where you go to it and it plays the old music. I said, oh my God, this is cool. I caught my attention. Yeah. And he goes, oh, look, I'm going to do it this way. And he turned it into old Mario and he 2D'd it. I was like, wow, that's interesting. You kind of go in between both worlds.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's the best of both worlds. You know? Yeah. For a while there, they were making sure everything was backwards compatible, but then people were like, well, why do I have to buy the new one, you know?
Yep, true. Yeah, it's like, I'll just keep this one. Yeah,
exactly.
What's so special about this? I have this one. Now, as we hit the wind down here, we head towards the finish. Absolute favorite game. Doesn't even have to be one that you were a part of, you created. What's the favorite wrestling game?
I think it's WrestleMania, the arcade game. It was my first real, when I came in to Acclaim, I was an analyst, you know, and they knew I'd had some wrestling in my background and some WWE. And I guess that doesn't really, I mean, I didn't go to college to study WWE. It's just, I had some knowledge of the brand. And I got a lucky break. And started working on WrestleMania the arcade game. And I don't know if you remember, it was with the Midway guys. Out of Chicago. And Sal DeVita is still a friend of mine. You know, I remember meeting him. And their office was a mental institution. I wish I was joking mm-hmm. with you, but like it was a brick building. And as you walked around or through it, you go, there's no windows here. And you're like, yeah, figure it out, you know? But I remember going out there. So let's see, I started at Acclaim January. And then by next December, they put me on. Yeah, because when I went out there to meet with Sal and Mark Trammell to talk about the arcade game, you know, when things start to, in your head, start to click, it started to click like, oh, this is something that I really like, and this is something that I could do and I could be good at and, you know, be excited to wake up. And it really just got me amped to get in every day, you know, work on the project. I can remember we did WrestleMania for, let's see, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. Do you remember the 32X?
Yes, crazy, yeah.
Right, PC, and then we did it for the PSX and the Saturn. But it was so exciting. It was so new, you know. And look, WWE started to hit its stride. You know, like I said, we were kind of in lockstep. It was one of those things that was a turning point for me. You know, I loved the brand, and now I get to work on it. You know, I thought like, well, I washed out. I'll never be able to, you know, I don't want to say it was a dream, John. I think my dream was to play first base for the New York Mets. But, you know, I loved it. You know, it always felt good to me. So getting to do that and also getting to learn, like one of the things I truly love now is working in gaming, you know, talking about games. It's changed a lot. I get it. You know, and the gaming business seems to be in a real tough spot right now. You know, there have been a lot of layoffs and closures, but that's okay. It'll come back. It always does, you know. And, you know, one of the things that helped me make my decision to leave WWE in 2015 was, you know, we kind of doing the same stuff over and over. Well, after I got, you know, over to RetroSoft, I started going to like these independent shows, not independent wrestling, independent video games. Hmm. There's some talent out there, John, that just need a little bit of guidance and direction. You know, I'm sorry. I don't want to keep going if I'm going over. I'm just letting you know.
No, not at all. Keep going. Yeah.
There are some studios, you know, every great video game story, two guys in a garage, you know, two guys in a basement. You can't thumb your nose at any of it because you never know when the next, you know, Halo or, you know, It or Quagmire, you know.
It's true. Now, leaving WWE, that was a tough decision for you. Did you like want to stay there forever kind of thing or no?
You know, there was a lot of changes. There was a lot of changes in my department. All the people, at one point, I was the last of, like, you know, the people that were there for a while. The work was getting kind of, I thought, I'm not, and this isn't indicative of WWE, it's the gaming. I felt like every year there were two big releases, right? Call of Duty would come out. And then in the back end of the year, and then in March, April, somebody would put out something like a Red Dead Redemption that you'd hope would carry us till Madden. I felt like it was starting to get a little staid, you know, and you start saying to yourself, well, maybe there's other things out there, you know, maybe there's other. And, you know, it was the same stuff over and over. So I took a chance, you know, so let me. Like, yeah, and it was difficult because, like I said, I loved it there and the people were great, you know, and I still like the product. I don't have a bad thing to say about it. You know, they were good to me.
What's next for you? I know we can't get too deep into the weeds on the game, but what's next?
You know, continue to work in gaming, continue to make compelling games, not just, you know, console games, but mobile and you know, tablet. Make sure that some of these untapped talents that are out there get, you know, where they need to be, or they get some help. Like I said, they just need some guidance. They need some money. And it's out there right now. GDC is taking place in San Francisco. It's one of the best shows you'll ever go to because everybody just goes there and says, listen, this is what we're working on. You want in, you want in. You know, it was one of my favorite shows. Yeah, so I'm hoping to continue. I feel like I've just started, you know, because the first half was a lot of wrestling. I feel like I have a lot to contribute on that end, you know, the biz dev side of things, the licensing side of things, the strategic partnerships and relationships. It's one of the things that I worked really hard at while at WWE and Acclaim to make sure, because, you know, game guys could be a little weird or difficult to, you know. So I tried really hard to make it, you know. I once was called the Huey Lewis of my department, like, because I didn't have a guitar in my cubicle or, you know, some sort of instrument or plant, you know. I took it with, I guess, some pleasure. It was a compliment, I think.
Yeah, Huey Lewis is a legend. Come on. Yeah. The power of love. Come on.
Yeah.
So next, more wrestling or
yeah,
just kind of all, or are you doing different things?
I'm trying to do different things. So right now, like I said, I'm consulting with Hyper Focus Games, but I'm still out there, you know, looking for the next big thing, the next iteration of my career. I'm really excited about the prospects. You know, I know that with chaos that the gaming industry is in comes opportunity. You know, and you just have to have enough horses to get through the desert, and I can help with that.
Where can everybody find you, follow you, see you, social media, otherwise?
I'm kind of old for social media. You can reach out to me at my email at marcher acclaimedwrestling510@gmail.com. Hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. That's about it, you know.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate all the time going down a little bit of memory lane, a little WWF, a little Acclaimed. I love it.
John, I really appreciate it. You know, Brian said you were a great dude. He was right. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Brian. Wow, high praise. Thanks, Brian.
Nope, he said you were a terrific guy. And again, thanks for having me on. You didn't have to.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.